We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
March has arrived and we're only weeks away from the big tournament. Yes, that tournament. Make sure to head to BetOnline and open an account today to get in on their $100,000 Bracket Madness contest starting March 15th. That's right, I said $100,000 and March 15th. You don't need to be hardcore to get in on the action. With multiple entries available, it's the season's best chance to cash in. And remember, the NBA and XFL are still going strong. So whatever your passion is, BetOnline is the place to be for all your betting needs. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner, Bet Online, to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account. Make sure to use that promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, for your 50% sign up bonus. Bet Online, your online sportsbooks experts.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to Brooklyn Buzz. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. This episode is brought to you by betonline.ag and on Tucket. But, Jack, how are we doing?
The Nets beat the best team in the NBA. The Nets are the best team in the NBA.
Very impressive win tonight for the Nets, 104-102 over the Lakers in LA. Before we get started, though, a quick reminder to find us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods. But, Jack, where do we begin?
Well, you tell me, Nick. The first half, the second half, the second and third quarters. The last quarter was a scrappy affair. Spencer Dinwiddie, you know, seems to be making plays left and right, giving away offensive fouls. Caris LeVert having another good outing. Where do you want to go with this one?
You know, let's start from the beginning and then work our way to the end. I think in the first quarter of this game, you know, you didn't feel great about the Nets, but they were playing good basketball and just missing shots. And being down six, you're like, okay, you know, the percentages are going to start to even out throughout this game. You know, you're a little bit scared going to a close game when the other team has LeBron James and Anthony Davis and your superstars, Kyrie and KD, are injured and out for the season. But they fought. They came through. Guys stepped up. Like you mentioned, Spencer, solid game. Caris Spencer, game, solid game. And then Chris Chioza, I thought he provided a really nice spark for that second unit.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we need to start a chai hive or a shy hive for Chris Chioza, because what he is doing with this team in his limited minutes, it's like, well, why wasn't this guy playing earlier? You know, 3 of 7 from the field. His passing is absolutely outstanding. Might have to go through some play-by-play of his, because he is just bringing something to this team. And he's only on a two-way contract. And if he's going to be playing, I think it's Nets Daily that continues to reiterate this, that if Chioza is going to play for this team in the playoffs, then it's going to have to waive someone. And, you know, there's not really many players on this roster that deserve to be waived in that sense of the imagination. But Chioza certainly deserves to be playing playoff basketball when the Nets do get there. And he is earning the minutes and he's playing really capably in the time that he's out there.
Yeah, I mean, he finished with 5 assists, but he had a couple of dimes out there where guys just missed shots. And like you said, Jack, on that two-way contract, you would think they might consider, you know, waiving Theo Pinson and, you know, making Cristioza a full-time player just because of his ability to run that second unit and having confidence in him out there. And then defensively, for his size, I think he does a really good job. Like, he's never going to be a lockdown defender, but he at least puts in a lot of effort out there, and you constantly can feel him defensively.
Yeah, you got to respect effort. You got to respect effort at the end of the day. He's a small dude, so he can't necessarily provide you, you know, a massive wingspan like guys like David Nwaba in the past have, but he provides a requisite effort. And, you know, the bench did some nice things today. I thought that everyone contributed in some way, Nick, in the minutes that I saw. But, you know, that last play, should we dive into that last play, the defense, Kevin Durant getting his voice nice and loud right in Anthony Davis's ear as well?
Yeah, I mean, we could get to the play before it. You know, they isolated LeBron James on Caris LeVert, and, you know, Caris did the best he could, tried to draw the offensive foul. DeAndre kind of came over the help defense. Then LeBron misses a layup. He probably makes most of the time, ends up missing here. The ball gets kind of all crazy, touches DeAndre, ends up touching Danny Green, Spencer Dinwiddie, out of bounds. Then it's Lakers ball. And like you said, you know, everyone thought LeBron was going to take that last shot. The Nets made sure it was going to be tough for him. They ended up leaving Anthony Davis open on the wing. And like you mentioned, KD made it a little bit tougher over there for him, and he ended up missing the three. But AD was knocking down his threes all night.
Yeah, he was. So I think that play call wasn't a bad one. It was a good one. You get an open shot to, you know, one of the best players in the NBA right now, and LeBron James is always going to find the open man in any sort of kickout situation. But for me, Nick, I know you said you were surprised at it, but I was unreservedly surprised at the fact that LeBron James missed that. I'm like, oh, he's got LeVert here. He's got Vert here. And it literally is in, and then it goes out, and then LeBron's just like, my bad, that was supposed to go in. And it was. I thought the Nets lost the game there, or we would have been heading to OT. And then, you know, the scrappiness from DJ to get the board, and then Spencer Dinwiddie fighting for it as well, goes off him. You know, at the end of the day, sometimes those scrappy little deflections here and there, it knocks off some time off the clock and it gets you the win. And, you know, it's a nice way to start this West Coast road trip.
Yeah, 100%. I think just the scrappiness at the end of the play. And even though, you know, LeBron was able to get to the rim, I felt like the Nets didn't make it super easy for him. And DJ was just coming over at the right time, where I don't know if he necessarily impacted LeBron, but he had to think about him coming in, and he didn't want to obviously get rejected. And like you mentioned, just taking those extra 3 seconds off the clock, because I almost felt when Anthony Davis got the ball that he might not even have enough time to get the shot off.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. But, you know, credit to the Nets defense in this closing moments. You know, team defense, it was, you know, the scrappiness, you know, it's almost like the Nets of olden ways, where we sort of see the scrappiness, you know, elevate ourselves to being, you know, and bringing the Lakers down, because they're a really sort of pretty Showtime sort of team. But at the end of the day, quality win. That second half for you, Nick, you know, the Nets outscored the Lakers 48-44. You know, was there much of what stuck out to you, I guess?
That third quarter, I thought the Nets played with good energy, and then they capitalized when LeBron was out of the game. And I think for the Lakers, that's kind of been an issue for them all season long, you know, having to depend on just get Anthony Davis post-ups. And I felt like the Nets did a great job when AD got the ball and forcing him to take mid-range shots and getting him out of his positions. So just a lot of credit to the Nets defense. And like you said, Jack, they were very scrappy, and they played a good basketball game tonight. You know, they beat the Lakers on the boards. They had 14 offensive boards. They only had 10 turnovers after having almost 30 in the last game. You know, assist-wise, 24 assists, not an amazing number, but still, and they were scrappy defensively. So I just felt like the Nets had some really good effort tonight, and it turned into a win, especially on a night where they really didn't shoot well. 41% from the field and 32% from three, and a lot of those threes were wide open. They were just missing.
Who do you think was the Nets' best player tonight, Nick?
I think tonight probably was Spence. I mean, he had his bad moments, but there was moments in this game where he took AD one-on-one ISO and dunked on him in this game. Like, it wasn't a clean, fresh dunk, but it still was like he got to the rim and he put it down, and there was just a couple plays where, like, okay, Spencer, this is what we know you can do. You know, if you get pretty much most guys off the dribble, you're just so quick you can get to the rim. It's about kind of making sure he has that space there. And I felt like the Lakers did a good job early in the game, but the Nets changed it up a little bit and trying to create more space for him, and it worked out. And I think they got a little bit away from pick and rolls and letting, you know, Caris and Spencer ISO on their own a little bit.
Yeah, I thought Spencer's play, almost the second last play where he had that spin move to get past Davis, I thought was, you know, really pretty. Yeah, really, really pretty. And DJ almost got the offensive board there. That would have been one of the plays of the night, if not one of Spencer Dinwiddie's highlights of the season. But yeah, he was absolutely great. 23 points for him. 8 of 8 from the free throw line. So that he's doing quite nicely there. Always good to see. Wasn't hitting the three ball, but Caris LeVert was. Nick, your boy, was still doing some good things. 22 points, 7 rebounds for him, including 2 offensive boards. couple of steals, a block. You know, this is another game we're speaking about. Spencer Dinwiddie and Caris LeVert playing some really good minutes. Caris LeVert playing 38 minutes tonight.
Yeah, he definitely was really good out there, Caris. And I thought this was a tough matchup for him against the Lakers because they have such big bodies inside and they do a great job of shutting down the paint. But I really liked his impact defensively in this game. He created two steals. He created that block. There was just plays out there where Caris was looking to be locked in defensively and have an impact on this game. And I think there was a different type of confidence knowing like, hey, I'm a better defender than these guys are offensive players when we're talking about a Danny Green and Avery Bradley and a Kyle Kuzma, where obviously LeBron is the king. But against other guys, you could see Caris feel confident not only offensively in this game but defensively. And he had another really clutch three in the fourth quarter, which I think is kind of underrated for him. He's probably hit after Joe Harris the most clutch threes on this team.
How do you, are you a big buyer into Caris LeVert's three-point shooting now? Do you think that he is a legitimate threat from there and the confidence and execution that he has shown is to be bought into maybe for the rest of his career?
Yeah, I think so. I'm buying in the confidence. I'm not just saying that, obviously, I'm a big supporter of Caris, but you can see it in the corner threes. And in the past, I don't know his numbers off the top of my head, but I don't remember his corner three ever being great. But over this last stretch, it looks like it's money from out there. You just feel confident like he's going to knock it down. And he's just shooting the ball differently. It's not, he's not feeling rushed. And we've talked about it in the past, maybe not as much this season, but last season, where his mechanics would almost change from game to game or quarter to quarter, where we're seeing more consistency from him now.
Yeah, definitely. I think consistency is key. We've said that about Caris. I think we said it in the season preview episode about him in that sort of sense. Nick, I'm scrolling Twitter right now, and I'm seeing the GIF nonstop of Theo, Kevin, TLC, Garrett Temple yelling in the ear of Anthony Davis. And I mean, it's my new favorite GIF, my friend.
Yeah, there was probably one GIF in this game that I really, really liked that I don't know we'll ever see unless I go create it myself. After Spencer hit that mid-range jumper to give the Nets the lead, Caris made some disgusted face towards him, and I just want to GIF that.
Oh, I love a stanky face. I love a stanky face. We got a few good guys who can do the stank face. You know, yeah. DJ's probably the king of the stank face. But we'll get to DJ, Nick. Another start for him. 8 points, 12 boards. Had a dime, 4 offensive boards. Did miss those 2 crucial free throws late. But what did you think of DJ? And there was, I got a little bit angry with him because I thought he injured my boy Joey Buckets with that box out. But I got called out by our dude Billy Reinhardt about the fact that DJ was getting the right box. That it might have been Caris LeVert. I'm not sure how much I buy into it, but what did you think of his performance tonight in LA, his old hometown, home city?
Yeah, I thought he was solid. I didn't think he was amazing. JaVale McGee did a great job of kind of limiting his lobs, and we know that's DJ's biggest threat offensively. They were able to squeeze a couple in there. And then rebounding-wise, he was really solid. I think Anthony Davis is a tough matchup for him, especially pulling him out to the three-point line when the Nets are so dependent on having DJ back there to, you know, contest LeBron or any other drivers on the team. So I thought for his skill set and at this time in his career, I thought he did a solid job on Anthony Davis. You're not really going to expect him to do an amazing job. You know, Jared Allen's probably a better matchup for AD, but I thought DeAndre was solid in his performance. Nothing crazy, nothing bad. I just thought it was a good game.
Yeah, that's it at the end of the day. And Jared Allen obviously continuing his form off the bench. Not one of his best nights if you're looking at the box score, Nick, but was he making an impact in any sort of sense?
I think so. I honestly, this really stuck out to me. First play, he's in the game. Markieff Morris is in the game. Markieff Morris tries to shove Jared Allen to the ground on the free throw attempt, and like, and this is something I've noticed a lot this season. Like, veteran players are trying to punk Jared Allen, and the Lakers consistently did that tonight. And you can tell Jared Allen was starting to get aggravated again. Lakers do a nice job of shutting down the paint and a lot of those lobs. But I thought Jared Allen had a nice impact defensively and even had a switch on to LeBron a few times. I didn't think he did a bad job forcing him to shoot a jump shot. And then whatever it might be, I thought he did a good job on AD. So, you know, the box score doesn't look good for Jared Allen, but I didn't think it was a bad game.
Ever wonder why button-ups look so long and baggy? That's because they were never meant to be worn that way. Untucked shirts were specifically designed to be worn untucked. No matter your size or shape, their shirts are the perfect untucked length. With more than 50 fit combinations, Untucked shirts look great on tall, short, slim, and athletic guys of all ages. Don't just take my word for it. Try Untucked for yourself. Visit Untucked.com. Use code BLUEWIRE for 20% off your first order. They even offer free shipping and returns on all orders in the U.S. That's Untucked.com and promo code BLUEWIRE for 20% off your first order.
Do you think this is sustainable for the rest of the season? Do you think this is the way we're going to go? You know, DJ gets that 25 to 27 minutes and Jared Allen gets, you know, that 20 to 23. Or is Jacques Vaughn going to show some flexibility? What are your thoughts on the center rotation going forward?
Pre-game, he mentioned he was looking more for the flexibility, you know, approach. And I think with this game, it, you know, the Lakers being so physical and being so big, you probably prefer DJ out there, especially closing, going against some of those bigger bodies. But I could see matchups in the future where Jared gets more minutes, especially if he's just playing better. And we know DJ will eventually throw up a game where he just doesn't have it and he looks old. And that'll be a game where Jared Allen maybe plays close to 30 minutes.
Yeah, that's it at the end of the day. And I think that if we can look at it as a strength of ours and hopefully, you know, get that mix and match. There aren't many teams in the NBA who have two quality big men. And, yes, DeAndre certainly is waning, but Jared Allen is on the up. They're sort of almost co-aligned in ways in terms of where their trajectories are right now. Nick Wilson Chandler, I guess his sort of biggest impact was defending LeBron in some key possessions. What did you think of his performance overall tonight? Obviously, similarly with Jared Allen, the box score doesn't necessarily scream like he made a massive impact, but, you know, the dude is strong and he makes plays on the defensive end.
Yeah, he's a fifth starter. You know what I mean? He's not getting a ton of offensive touches. The Nets don't want him probably to shoot a lot. His big body was able to kind of make it a little bit more difficult for LeBron. You know, the best that he can do at this point in his career. Thought rebounding, he had a nice impact. The only thing that really stuck out negative for him, he had an inbound turnover, you know, after a made basket, and that's just something you never really want to see. But I think Wilson, like, his impact offensively will really be only nights where he's feeling good from three.
Yeah, I think that's it in the day. The three-point shot certainly dictates his offensive rhythm and, you know, that's what he's there for. He did hit one, hit a couple of free throws as well, was rebounding the ball, had some dimes. So, yeah, Wilson Chandler is at this point and where the Nets are in their current iteration, is that fifth starter. But, you know, the two other guys at the bench that we haven't really touched on, Nick, is Toyin Prince and TLC. Who do you think had the better game? Who made a more of an impact? Give me your summation of both of those guys' games.
Yeah, I didn't think it was actually great games for either guy. I mean, TLC made more shots, so I think that's going to be more important. He's making more hustle plays. But Torian Prince had a couple solid possessions on LeBron. You know, not consistently good, and obviously 1 of 8 from 3 is never going to make you feel great. But he did hit one clutch 3 in the fourth quarter, so we'll give him that. I'd say TLC probably gets the edge here for just making more of the hustle plays and consistently cutting off ball. That's one thing I'll say about TLC. Even though when he's not making his shots, he's great at moving without the ball and playing with a guy like Chris Chioza. I think that makes it a little bit more impactful.
Love it, Nick. Love it, love it, love it. I'm going to get to Dave DeFore of The Athletic fame, and I want you to hear your thoughts on that. These two very, very funny, very awesome tweets. Spencer Dinwiddie has to be the MVP now, overcoming the firing of his coach and the team's two best players, being out for the season with injuries. The guy has to deal with New York traffic. He has so much on his plate. Spencer for MVP?
God, this is crazy that the LeBron talk this weekend, though, with all the narratives, and it was just like on top of everything. And then it's funny that he ends up losing to the Nets. It's not like he had a bad game, but the MVP chatter for LeBron has been kind of nuts. But we didn't talk about Joe Harris, Jack.
We didn't. I mean, we touched on the injury, and my love is safe and he's healthy. That's all that matters at the end of the day.
How do you feel about the injury? Like, do you think it's going to be something where he came back in the game, but I feel like it might be something where tomorrow it kind of feels terrible.
Yeah, I think that whenever it is an ankle, it's always that day after. How much does the swelling sort of come out? And obviously the medical stuff on the road trip, you know, when you're flying around as well, that certainly doesn't necessarily help the situation either. So I would be surprised if Joe Harris does suit up again and we might see some Nick Claxton who's on this road trip, maybe a bit of Rhodey or Theo. Please give me some Nick Claxton, despite the fact that KD is crossing him up in some practices. We'll get to that a little bit later as well. But, you know, I don't expect him to play. But the fact he was out there, Joe is a tough dude, and I don't think he gets enough credit for that.
No, he is a tough dude. Like, Joe does not ever want to show he's injured. I've never seen somebody, like, almost break their ankle, instantly, like, sprout up off the ground and run to the bench. He was like, teammates didn't even have a chance to pick him up.
No, it's like Anthony frickin' Davis, a 6'10" Goliath, lands on you. Like, you're gonna be pretty damn hurt. You know, Steph Curry, when he had Aaron Baines land on his hand, missed frickin' 5 months of the season. And Joe Harris is like, nah, get me back out there, Jacques. I gotta hit another clutch bucket for us. But yeah, Joe Harris, I can't say enough good things about him. His stat line tonight, you know, sort of consistent enough. 12 points, 2 of 4 from 3, 5 of 8 from the field, a couple of dimes, couple of boards. You know, a solid enough performance from Joe Harris. I guess this is sort of what the baseline is, what we want from Joe.
Yeah, and I thought Joe actually had a nice impact in terms of making LeBron defend. because early in this game, they put LeBron on Joe Harris, and Joe Harris was just consistently running around, led to some open looks, or led to some Lakers players having to help LeBron, leading to other guys getting open looks. So I think Joe's value, obviously, spacing-wise and just movement-wise is, you know, crucial to this team. It's going to be interesting if he does miss time, how they fill in that role, because, you know, we thought early in the season Taurean Prince could provide some of that, but obviously the way he's been shooting this month, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's it at the end of the day. Our boy Farhad was retweeting out a little bit of a meme where Kyle Kuzma crowned LeBron James, and then the Photoshop Spencer did with his face on it. I love Twitter. It's a platform that we don't deserve, and I can't believe that it's free. But, Nick, any other sort of takeaways from this game? Obviously, it was a good win. Probably not one of the best wins of the season when we've seen, you know, that Boston Celtics game. But, you know, to beat one of the form teams of the NBA in decent closing fashion, it certainly warms the heart.
Yeah, I mean, the Lakers just beat the Bucks and the Clippers this past weekend. Obviously, you know, some people say they were due for a letdown, but at the end of the day, this is a team with LeBron James and Anthony Davis. You know, Dwight Howard didn't play, but they still have plenty of other good players out there. The Nets played a good enough game to beat the Lakers and give themselves a chance to win. They made the crucial plays down the stretch, and they came out with a W. Hopefully, this could be a nice confidence booster for the team on the rest of the road trip. We know Golden State's obviously not the craziest team, but Steph is likely to play in that game. Going against the Clippers, though, on Friday, that's when you're like, okay, can we put up another good performance? I don't think you have to beat the Clippers, but if you're able to, you know, keep it within 10, play a solid game, give yourself a chance to win in the fourth quarter, you're feeling really good about yourself over this final stretch.
The Nets have been capable against pretty much all of the best teams in the NBA. We've beaten Toronto, we've beaten Boston, we've beaten the Lakers now. The Nets on a good night can really, it's essentially any team except for the Bucks, and we haven't really versed the Clippers that often to really make a summation about it.
Yeah, we haven't played them yet this year.
So it shows that, you know, I mean, we're going to be versing them at their fullest right now as they sort of head into some form and really want to close out the season strong. One sort of stat that sticks out to me, Nick, before we get to some of the coaching stuff, is the Nets limited the Los Angeles Lakers to 12 free throws, and they only hit 7 of them. LeBron was 1 of 5 from there, which certainly does help.
Yeah, I thought they did a really nice job in kind of allowing LeBron and AD to shoot threes and mid-range jumpers, and they're like, okay, we're going to lock down the paint and make it a little bit more difficult for you down here.
Definitely. And I mean, I just retweeted the fact, and I guess we can probably get to it, and you know, a self-shout out at the J-Man JBT. The Nets beat one of the championship favorites, and we're going to steal their best assistant coach. And I got that Bill Nye dancing down the runway sort of dance.
I like it. And that's, you know, tell them who it is, Jack.
It's Mr. Phil Handy, Nick. And there's, you know, rumblings, you know, building. And it started with our guy, Brandon Scoop B. Robinson. He had a nice little article out on his on the website for Heavy, sort of illuminating the relationship between Kyrie and Mr. Handy as well. And then, you know, an undefeated article that our dude, Billy Reinhardt, was taking some quotes from. And you know, it essentially boiled down to that, you know, Phil Handy was the man who introduced Kyrie Irving to Kobe Bryant. That really strong mentorship and relationship was massive. And Phil Handy was also a guy that Kyrie Irving singled out in terms of motivating the team in the Golden State 2016 championship win for Cleveland. So there is an embedded, really strong chemistry there. And I mean, Nick, I got some quotes. You want me to throw them at you?
Throw them at me, Jack.
All right, so I've got two. So if I'm winding on a little bit, you know, to shut me up, you can mute me. You've got the editing over there. But he said this: the speech he gave after game two really hit home for all of us. It was a man-to-man speech that needed to be said, that we all understood, in order to will ourselves to understand that we still have a chance to win this series. And then he said this in relation to training and in terms of the sort of figureship that he had over him. In terms of working out late nights, doing whatever it takes to win, learning how to lead, understanding the nuances of the game, and understanding what it takes to be a great player in this league, Handy's really kind of put down the foundation and steps. He's kind of like my dad in terms of in basketball when I'm away from my family. So he's been influential in my life. Big, big words from Mr. Irving.
Yeah, and it's not something typically Kyrie will say. You know what I mean? Like, family and relationships mean a lot to him. And then when somebody asked him in the past about, like, the LeBron being, like, a father figure to him or something, that made him really upset. So for Kyrie to say this is, like, my basketball dad, I thought was pretty interesting. And then obviously just having the respect of not only Kyrie but Kobe as well, I think is huge. And obviously it's rumored that KD respects him too. So being able to be an assistant coach on that Cleveland team, he obviously had some type of relationship with LeBron. So I think this is a guy the Nets will really consider. I don't know if he's the favorite right at the moment, but I think he's a guy that could gain some traction because there already seems to be a relationship in place and respect in place, which I think is really crucial when you have superstar players.
Yeah, I think Sean Marks will certainly be doing his due diligence there. And this is per Bet Online and Alex Schiffer, the next Brooklyn Nets full-time head coach in the lead at odds of 5-4 is Tyronn Lue. The man who we don't want to be there is Mark Jackson. Second, Jeff Van Gundy is there as well, 5-1. Jacques Vaughn, the man who's currently coaching the team at 6-1. Tom Thibodeau at 7-1. Jason Kidd, 9-1. Adam Harrington, 10-1. Adam Harrington obviously has a nice relationship with Kevin Durant and will probably be sticking around in some sort of assistant coaching capacity. But give me all that money. Get me to betonline.ag because I'm putting some damn money on Phil Handy.
Yeah, I would put some money on Phil Handy. I think Van Gundy, I don't really see as a possibility. Thibodeau, I don't really see as a possibility. I mean, maybe there's a slight chance for Jason Kidd. Adam Harrington seems like a super, like, dark horse candidate that could possibly pop up. Same thing with Jacques Vaughn. If for some reason the team was, like, miraculously amazing over this final stretch, he'd maybe get a chance. But it was also noted, we kind of chatted about it too, Mark Stein mentioned that the Nets are looking for, what was it, a high voltage or high watt head coach?
High wattage, which I think is just someone... It seems to me that we've sort of read and heard in terms of the article from Nets Daily and Shams on the podcast, on the podcast, the fact that Kenny's communication wasn't getting through and he wasn't really able to build a partnership and foundation with superstars. And obviously, the Nets seem to me the route that I believe that they will take and I think they will take is a guy who's not necessarily an amazing X's and O's coach, but a guy who can manage the superstars and let them run their free reign, let them lead the team on the court and off the court and just allow them to sort of, you know, flourish in the Brooklyn environment, in that franchise environment. But, you know, Stephen A. Smith brought up three names this week as well, Nick. You know, Greg Popovich, Ty Lue, and Mark Jackson. You know, there's names floating around. I was listening to a podcast yesterday, I don't think I told you, Joe Varden of The Athletic, who has strong ties around the NBA, does a podcast literally called Tampering. So he knows all the behind the scenes. And he said he brought the fact that he heard from a person who knows behind the scenes and knows things before they happen, that Lue could be bound for Houston or Brooklyn.
I mean, I think it's a possibility. We like, I know there's still kind of like this weird feeling about Ty Lue. Is he a good coach? Is he a bad coach? How much did he do with that Cleveland team? How much of an impact did he really have? Did he challenge LeBron or did he allow LeBron to do his thing? I mean, based off of what we know in reports, it seemed like he was willing to challenge LeBron and also Kyrie. So, I mean, I think he could be a candidate. I don't know if I'm willing to buy in 100%, but I think at the end of the day, like you mentioned, Jack, I don't think it's as much about the X's and O's. It's more about relationships and communication and the players feeling like they're being heard. And it seemed like that wasn't the case with Kenny. And maybe there was some stubbornness. We're never going to know the full details in that situation. But at the end of the day, you have KD, you have Kyrie. You're going to have one or two of either Caris LeVert or Spencer Dinwiddie and some other talent on this team. You're going to have a chance to go to the finals.
Yeah, that's it at the end of the day. And obviously health and coaching are going to matter. You know, Jacques Vaughn has done a decent enough job so far, especially in tonight's performance. I thought that what he did in terms of, you know, the X's and O's and the adjustments to make things tough for the Lakers, I thought was really good. You know, at the end of the day, we got the win. You know, he's 2-0 with this team. He's not necessarily has the grading coaching record, head coaching record with Orlando, but he's doing that. He's learning some things, you know, whether from Coach Kenny or the other guys around the Nets organization. In that sort of sense, Nick, you know, we also heard some different things about, you know, maybe the fact that Coach Kenny wanted to go out on his own terms and the meetings that he had behind the scenes, you know, at Boston during the halftime and then after the Memphis game, you know, he was sort of like, you know what, if I'm going down my own way. And this sort of mutual parting of ways seems to be gaining more and more credence. And the fact that, you know, more and more people in the know seem to be sort of believing it. And, you know, it's rare for that to happen. A firing, whatever you want to call it. But it seems to me that I'm believing more and more after each day and each article that I read that Coach Kenny didn't want to be there as much as, you know, the team necessarily might not have wanted him either.
Yeah, it's, you know, at first, you know, people naturally be like, oh, it's a PR stunt, you know, trying to make it not look as bad. But it really does seem like Kenny didn't want to coach his team anymore, and maybe they weren't buying into what he had to say, and the team wanted changes, and he wasn't willing to make those changes. And hey, he's going to coach the way he wants to coach, and he felt maybe he couldn't coach his squad anymore or he wasn't getting the response that he needed for them to be successful. Because at the end of the day, the players aren't buying into what you're saying as a coach or respecting what you have to say. I think, you know, it's kind of like talking to the wall.
That's it at the end of the day, Nick. And Have we mentioned the fact that I think that you were probably the guy who was the biggest on this, and I think a lot of people took this as a main takeaway from some of the Athletic reporting about Kevin Durant chiming up in some of these sort of, you know, air it all out meetings, and sort of the players really resonating with that, and sort of him sort of saying that we need to create better culture and championship habits. That seemed to really stick out for you.
Yeah, no, it really did. I know, we know KD hasn't really spoke a ton this season or probably been super involved in making his input felt, but in that moment in that team meeting, he mentioned that they weren't playing at a championship level and they weren't developing the habits they needed to develop. And I think that's important coming from one of the best players to ever play basketball, not to mention a former champion, finals MVP type player. He knows how to win and what level you need to be at. And obviously it was apparent over the last couple of weeks that the Nets weren't playing at that level. And I think it's important for you to get leadership from your best players.
That's it at the end of the day. And, you know, he's showing some leadership again tonight, yelling in the ear of Anthony Davis, helping us get the win. And he's doing some nice things in practice, crossing up again, Nicholas Claxton, and getting that dunk. You got a bit of traction with that one, Nicky boy. That was a fun, fun clip.
How many times did you watch it?
Four. And I've been working, so like I've found time to somehow watch it. So I've got four so far.
I've watched it like 25 times easily. I'm not exaggerating either. I cannot lie to you that I've probably never been more excited in my entire life to watch a social media clip. Like, usually most of the clips I see on social media are just like jokes or funny things. And if it's a basketball play, we've pretty much already seen it. But this is like, KD is looking fresh. The one thing that really stood out in this video, and probably most people will be like, oh, the dunk is so important in the crossover. But I was watching the landing, and he looked very confident and fine landing on his feet coming off the dunk. And usually that's an area where, like, landing off a dunk isn't always the easiest thing. You need to make sure you're 100% there. And he looked good. Like, I think KD is done healing at this point. Now it's like, hey, I'm getting back to basketball shape, getting back to my habits, and getting back to the KD we saw last year.
He looks damn good in that 9 seconds of video that we've seen. And hopefully we have millions more seconds to watch next season. And he continues to show some pretty damn good acumen. And, you know, I'm salivating at the prospect of him just actually playing basketball, you know, heading over very, very soon. Might have to cop a Kevin Durant jersey of some sort, of t-shirt jersey, some sort of memorabilia to commemorate the Slim Reaper number 7 coming back very soon. But Nick, anything else that you wanted to chat about? I'm not going to indulge in the Jason Kidd rumors at all. I refuse to. But any other sort of Nets news, anything from this Lakers game that you wanted to touch on before we wrap this buzz up?
No, I'm good, Jack. I need to get to bed. It's late over here, 1:30 on the East Coast. But as always, a pleasure. Big thanks, everybody, for listening. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.